war. Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no wars, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is your brother Ryan Mirdis, and welcome to this episode of Class War Battlefield Podcast. How y'all doing? So, are we ready for the coming reality? I'd like to say yes, but I'm an optimist. My realist side said, when I asked that question to myself, I've been asking that question to myself for a year, at least. My realist side says no. My realist side said, we are all facing a moment of collective terror where we realize that the world is not what we thought it would be. Now, this is kind of profound when you start to really ponder what we think the world is and what it actually is. You know, it's sort of like living, I'm trying not to take the easy route with this, trying to explain this. Because for young people, I could simply use school. But for older folk, I want to be more dramatic than that. You know, I've always been a fair person, so I try to speak truth whenever that truth is going to benefit somebody who is blindly walking into a situation that is going to cause them harm. Blindly walking. And there's a lot of people who do that. I'll give you a great example. When I say, you know, that we are, that we don't get the reality, you know. You ever worked at a place where, I don't know, maybe this hasn't happened. I mean, I've been privy to things like this periodically. But you ever worked at a place where mostly everybody around you is really friendly to one or two people? And, you know, you're a little naive. You're taking everybody's words and their actions and their deeds for what they, you know, for their face value. And then that underlying intuitive sense kind of kicks in, and you start realizing that even though they say the right things, they do the right things towards one person, in all actuality, they don't really like that person. not only do they not like that person, but they are actively trying to sabotage that person. And you pick this up even though your proof isn't overwhelming. It isn't monumental. It is subtle. It is proportioned. Or should I say portioned? And if somebody asked you on a stand or in a court of law to explain how did you actually know that they were doing these things, unless you were overly prepared for the question, you would struggle to answer it immediately, because it's not really one or two specific things that helped you see it. It's a conglomerate of statements and actions and the like. And so you watch this. So you watch this stuff, and I'll switch now and say from you to I, because I've seen this happen. And I've watched this stuff, and because I'm a fair person, especially in my 20s, you know, when I didn't appreciate the financial consequences sometimes of stepping out and doing the right thing. And so I would bear, you know, I'd get some backlash myself. And but I would step out, and when I saw this happening, I would walk up to a person and I'd say, listen, you know that so many people aren't really your friends, right? And it was crazy, because some of the people that I would help out like this, there wasn't many, because I didn't see it often, truthfully. I'll be honest with you guys, you know. The first half of my 20s, I was very, I was so optimistic, man. I miss them days sometimes. I think I was optimistic because I didn't understand the world as much as I do now. But the second half of my 20s, I got. So there was a couple times where I walked up to a person and was like, listen, you're not saying the right things, you're not doing the right things, and even though people are smiling in your face, they ain't really digging you, so you might want to shift, you know, your attitude. It wasn't really attitude, because most of these people weren't bad people, and most of these people didn't really have an attitude. It's just, for some reason, they weren't liked. And so I would approach them, and I would say something to them, and they would be shocked. They would be awed by the fact that people didn't like them. And then, you know, I too sometimes would be awed, because the people that would be picked on often didn't have those same type, didn't have the qualities that you would think of as being incompatible with a work environment. Some of these people were really, really nice people, and I just couldn't figure out why no one would like them. And then I started realizing, okay, this is more competition than, you know, actual personality. The person might be competent, and so, you know, other individuals who were less competent would want to get rid of, you know, you'd get the clicks. So you'd get the less competent person who usually had a little bit of power, with other people who would kind of protect their back, as long as the less competent person protected their back. And then they would get rid of everybody who looked like they might be competent enough to unseat them. It's a weird thing, you know, the psychology of some people. But it is what it is. So oftentimes these people would be awed, you know. And then there's the flip side of that, where you would get people who I would say something to, and you know, I can understand why they weren't liked, because they were not nice people per se, and their attitude was actually pretty crappy. But it always amazed me. I had this happen once, so I kind of learned a lesson from doing this, where I walked up to a person who was absolutely, you know, kind of jerkish, and I'm like, look, man, you know, you say you need the job, you got a kid, you should really kind of shift yourself, and because you're kind of pissing people off the way you're acting. And the person responded just absolutely venomously towards me and said, look, you know, who are you? You are incorrect. people love me. You know, what the hell is your problem? You don't have any clue what you're doing. And then they turned around and took what I, you know, had said, and then spread it across as if I was trying to start stuff with them to stop people from trusting me. So I kind of learned my lesson with trying to help out people like that. But this is kind of the United States of America. This is kind of the United States of America, particularly the people of the United States of America, because not only like these type of people do the United States of American populace have no general clue of the world's attitude towards them, particularly the government of the United States, but the overall community of the world is not satisfied with the United States. But not only that, most Americans, as ignorant as they are with what's going on outside the borders of the United States and how it's reflecting on how people perceive us in the United States, have no clue how bad it actually is on the inside of the United States. We have ideas. And I think if people were really committed, they could dig down and they could find they could find themselves an avenue to really knowing, because most of us, I think, on a deeper level, do know. It's just like people who are in psychological pain. They do know that they're in psychological pain. Their problem is deducing it and figuring out what that psychological pain is. The same is true with the United States of America. Most of us know we are in domestic trouble. We know there's a domestic problem. The question is, what is it? Now, the level of cognitive dissonance, which is really something that every individual with a domestic podcast should really be talking about presently, cognitive dissonance. The level of cognitive dissonance is formidable. It is so formidable, that we as a nation are almost becoming psychologically deranged. And I remember, you know, listening to Dr. King's speech on Beyond Vietnam. As I've said before, there was a time period where I was listening to that speech once a day. And in that speech, he said that America will never again, you know, be the hope of the world. We will be seen as a terror of the world, and imperialistic and wrong-headed. And I think there was a period of time where he was not correct. I think the world was hoping that the United States changed. But I can see now that most countries don't believe the U.S. are changing. And there are major, major conspiracies. Yes, conspiracies. Conspiracy is not a bad word. You should look it up sometime in your dictionary. There are major conspiracies occurring right now to unseat the United States and keep them unseated from being in control of the world. The tragedy with these conspiracies is the two leading countries that are likely to unseat the United States and replace the United States are themselves capitalist criminal cabals, because of the things the United States did to them. So you have Russia, who, if Naomi Klein is correct, was at one time moving towards being a Scandinavian type, Swedish type, socialist country. Imagine if Russia, this huge, huge juggernaut of a country went socialist, which is what the people wanted when the USSR collapsed. And then you have China, who is not, don't let them fool you about the communist thing, but China is actually, could be considered a communist country, but probably more authoritarian communist than social communist. So, both of these countries will act like the United States after a couple of generations, probably even less than a couple of generations. They will be heavy-handed. They will project their power like the United States if they're able to unseat the United States. But there are major conspiracies to do just that. To do just that. But you would know that listening to the news. What is frightening about these conspiracies is that whereas, you know, if you read, not whereas, but if you read the financial papers, if you read international business magazines, or if you just go kind of off the beaten path to start doing research, what you'd find is the United States has had openings during the past 20 years to derail every single, not every single attempt. I was going to say every single attempt, but it's not really like that. To derail this process, which we are now engaged in, of deindustrializing, of falling prey to our own arrogance, and allowing China and Russia to be in the position of trying to overtake what the U.S. is doing, or has done. The world has been begging. It is amazing to me that I see this now, but the world has been begging the United States to stay atop of it. And all it's asked is that the U.S. act responsibly. Now, this is what's amazing, is people still continue to come to this country because they do believe it's the land of the free and opportunity, blah, 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 right? They believe that. And for a lot of the world, this is a better alternative to the world that is that was created in their country by the United States and its Western allies. But now, the world is getting sick of America and its bullying practices. Not everybody, but much of the world is tired of the United States. Moreover, whereas in the United States, we don't have conversations centering around decolonialization and imperialism anymore, two words that 50 years ago were used everywhere. We don't have the conversations about how capitalism stems from colonialism and the exploitation relationships that were created to prop up the West, including the United States, who did not have the resources that the rest of the world had. We don't talk about things like that in the United States. We're in this weird haze of not realizing that's a reality still. Those conversations are had. those conversations are had around the world in places where we think the people are stupid. And I say we, not because as a black man I'm under any delusion that people consider me American, as a friend of mine from overseas told me, and actually didn't have to tell me. I finally parsed this out. They were describing how so many of their friends are married to Americans. And finally, one day, I looked at the person. I go, I got to ask you a question. When you say American, you're talking white, right? And the person said, yeah, of course. I go, okay. I go, so none of your friends are married to, like, you know, black American? And nope. Mm-mm. Married to Americans. Around the world, America means white. So I'm not saying we because I believe I'm an American. I understand the rest of the world don't see it that way. I understand most Americans don't see it that way. When they say American, they see white in their minds. But I need you to understand that, especially you being white, this is your reality. This is the cognitive dissonance. And yes, you probably are afflicted with it, just like your friends. So the question that I raised at the outset is really, are we ready for this new reality? The question is, what is this new reality? This is what is truthfully frightening. Because really, honestly, I understood where we were possibly going, where we were probably going, and why we might get there a couple of years back. I did. I'm really not joking. But the reality didn't really strike me as to where this wonderful train that we are on is headed. Until, and I'll be very honest with you, Barack Obama's second term was unfolding, and I really started noticing that the two groups that were doing all the talking, conservatives and progressives, were equally delusional about very different things. Progressives, until Bernie Sanders suddenly appeared, had no kind of class consciousness. Don't let them fool you. They had none. They talked a good game. They spoke a good game. But the reality was, they weren't really championing anything for the downtrodden. They weren't really championing anything for people like myself. And I used to listen to a lot of progressive podcasts, so I know this. And while conservatives mimicked and talked the whole concept of class this and class, they had no care about the people at the bottom. But that wasn't, you know, conservatives, that wasn't my problem. Conservatives were blinded by their lust for power. They wanted to be in power to make wealthier people more wealthy. And that's basically what, that was their goal. They were so in love with that concept that they would murder any portion of society to do that. And I'm really not using the incorrect word. I am saying murder because that's what they do. When you'd much prefer to keep millions of people from having health care, knowing that millions of those people will die in the next 10 years just so you can give money to the wealthy, that's murder. That is murder. Don't sugarcoat it. It's murder. And so I realized that the progressives were blinded with protecting their positions. They just wanted to maintain that middle class lifestyle, which in reality, most of these people, I'm not saying they're wealthy, but the majority of these people, you know, they were, you know, you got hundreds of thousands of dollars that your parents are going to leave you, sometimes more. And they were and are still in love. They've grafted themselves onto, you know, black radicalism. But I'm not fooled, because I know what black radicalism is. I know what radicalism was back in the 60s. Progressivism isn't radicalism. Not even close to being radicalism. I'm not fooled. But they were both delusional. They were stuck in illusions because they were trying to protect what they lusted after. For the conservatives, it was making money for the wealthy. For the progressives, it was protecting their spots. And I'm trying not to use the word privilege, because it's used too much today. And it's usually used in incorrect manners, but I'm not getting into that. But they wanted to protect their spots, and they're still doing it. So all of this class consciousness stuff with progressives is laughable now, because their real goal is to maintain, is to keep the middle class. Not to grow it, not to expand it, to keep the people who are there, there. And this, if you go back and you listen to a lot of podcasts from progressive shows, you know, 2 years after, 2 to 3 years after the, and in fact, I think probably even up to and through the 2012 election. So I was going to say 2 or 3 years after the financial meltdown. You heard them talk a lot about the shrinking middle class. Now, granted, you know, everybody was talking a lot about shrinking middle class. But the middle class is an actual small portion of this country. Let's be very frank about that. So if you are worried solely with the middle class, you are literally talking about 20%, 30% of the country. I am not into this game where they want to like bootstrap all these other people to the middle to the middle class. No. You're talking about a very small portion of the population. It's like the upper class, I'll you know, it's like 5%. And then you got kind of the noble class below that, which is more like 20%. And then you got the middle class below that, which protects the noble class and the upper class, which is how traditional societies were set up. See, we don't have that historical reference, again, to go back to that cognitive dissonance, we don't have that historical reference to understand how the society was built. So we don't, I apologize, I actually had to stop recording. There was, I live in a residential area, and I'm recording in a residential area. There was some background noise. But we don't have the type of historical reference in our minds to understand that this is actually how the society is set up. This whole idea of the middle class, you know, without understanding that you have your noble class, which is today mostly your financiers and people who, you know, make the money move in the society, and then you have that upper class, which is the real wealth of the country. Without all of that, your middle class doesn't have anything to do. Your middle class is meant to protect the rest. Now, I have utilized recently the breakdown of society that Richard Wolff used. I'm not too thrilled with it, but I've utilized it. We have to understand, though, that the progressives are, and by the way, the way he said it was 10%, 45%, and 45%. So the upper is 10, the middle is 45, and the bottom is 45. Yeah, that's not how it actually is. The bottom is significantly larger than that. You got the top 25, then the 30%, which I really don't even believe it's 30. It's more like 10% for your middle, your 10 or 15% for your middle class. And then a much larger, you know, lower class. That's how the societies of Europe have always been structured. The United States is no different. Not different. We gotta understand that. So, the progressives are stuck in that position. That's where their illusions come from, and the conservatives are on the other side doing what I've been talking about. So, the situation that all of this is creating, because we, sooner or later, cognitive dissonance leads to deep psychosis, and psychosis splits the mental reality and often the emotional reality of the individual. And you see this with the argument. You see this with the political argument. You see this with the uncertainty of the Supreme Court. Not even the circus around that. The fact that, and truthfully, you know, things like this have happened before, but we fantasize our life. So we forget just how corrupt this country was 120 years ago, where people were literally being murdered so they couldn't take congressional seats or they couldn't assume judgeships. I mean, it was that the United States looked just like these so-called backward developing countries. Things like that happen. They don't happen that often anymore because the wealthy have kind of squashed us all down. But they happened, and they still happen today. What's happening with the Supreme Court is a front, is a front stage performance of the life in these United States. Conservatives on every level claim to be the protectors of a great tradition while they are at the same time thumbing that great supposed tradition. And not only are they thumbing that great supposed tradition, they are giddy about it. And when people say enough is enough, not to say that the Democrats haven't been complicit, because they have been, but when people say enough is enough, that you've gone too far, the nihilist nature of the conservative, which is to destroy, to destroy, to destroy, which I don't care what you call, you know, if you call them Democrat or Republican, a conservative is a conservative, and all they are doing is destroying. That's what they know how to do. They don't know how to build anything. Now, you can go to other countries that have been around for the last 1,000 years, or have a history that have developed them over the last 1,000+ years, and you can make a different argument, but that's them. In the United States, conservatives have always been destroyers. That's what they do. They don't know how to do anything else. They know how to destroy, subjugate, conquer, kill, and maim. Why? Because that is how the country was won. That's how the country was conquered. And you can only dip into the well of your origins. So the United States, which says, oh, well, we're not really part of Europe, you know, we don't subscribe to being European, even though, guess what, you're white, and that means your people came from Europe. Okay, if you're going to go back to the well of the beginning of this country, well, you're talking about deceit, you're talking about murder, you're talking about conquering, you're talking about rape. You're talking about so many things that are destructive to human life. And yet, people lionize it as wonderful. So conservatives know how to destroy. They don't know how to do anything else. That's what they do. They destroy stuff. And when people get sick of that and say, no, it's time to stop doing that, we need to build something better, like what is kind of happening with the Supreme Court. conservatives don't know how to turn that off. Because now they're just, truthfully, they're just now a force for history. If you are not conscious of the power of history, the power of time, the power of internal will machinations in order to form what is happening in the present to affect the future, we don't talk about this in the United States because we don't teach the broader concepts of what actually physics is. Physics isn't just something to study. Physics has real consequences on the world. That's why it's called physics. Physical. But if you don't have concepts of all that, you don't realize that your ideology, what you think is real in manipulating society in the present for the future, will actually draw on resources that are behind you to project a vision before you through your actions. And so therefore you will become an actor without knowing the script if you weren't conscious of where your ideology, where your words, where your thought processes come from. Do you get what I'm saying? This is why it is massively important to study. And I think this is also why, I, on a subconscious level, because, well, as I've said to you before, the upper elite, they use astrologists and psychics and stuff. While they ridicule it and fund projects to make people think that it's not real, they use these things. And we must be conscious of that. But this is how you could learn to forecast the consequences of your action, by understanding past consequences of past actions, which you ascribe to. Which is why we don't really study history for deconstructive purposes anymore. We study history as bland things to study. A great example of this, I was listening for a while to a podcast, and it had so much promise, I'm not lying. It was two people who were madly well-versed in history. And I listened to a couple of their podcasts. One was on the financial meltdowns of the late 1800s, which was actually a very fascinating episode. And then there was another one, which I can't quite recall what it was. But anyway, both of these were very well done, but the rest of the podcast series wasn't well done. I could tell, you know, they were struggling to really parse out the information in a constructive form. If they had somebody there maybe who could say, you know, these are questions that you should be raising, these are questions that you shouldn't, the podcast would have probably been dramatically better. But at the same time, they were deconstructing history in order to talk about it, and then sometimes applying what was done, what was seen through that history to the present day, which I found fascinating. We don't do that anymore. The reality, which is why I speak about progressivism the way I do, because right now everyone's yelling about progressives this, progressives that. And I've called a show about this idea, about progressives not having a true vision. The reality which progressives think they're getting ready for is not the one that's actually coming into existence. And I think many of the people who are running for Congress presently, who are expected to take back the House currently, because look, the wealthy aren't stupid. They know the amount of discontent in this country is dangerous. They know the amount of discontent is dangerous. The people who progressives listen to, the wealthy listen to also. People like Chris Hedges, who, you know, is seen as this kind of new radical savior. He is consulted, or at least his work is consulted by the elite as much as those who are not in the elite and who look at him as a savior. Every person who is perceived that way by the general public, they are studied much more closely by the elite than by the people who call them wonderful. No joke. No joke. The elite understand that, oops, okay, I'll actually say this part because, you know, I think this is true. I think with the election of Donald Trump, the elite thought that they could flex and they could divert, flex a little muscle, beat a few people down, put in some laws that allowed cops to get heavy-handed, and divert people's attention with all of this nostalgia stuff that they're bringing back. And truthfully, this is the good part. I think they would have been able to actually get away with it. But here's what the catch is. Over the last 10 years, the movement from hyper high fructose corn syrup sugary snacks and foods with very low nutrition to foods that are natural and nutritious, I think has started opening people up. And so they understand that there's something happening. They get that there's something happening. And they're now trying to put the genie back in the bottle by allowing progressives to run. Now, granted, remember, there was, from the socialist website, the World Socialist website, I think the title of it is, there was that four-part article which talked about how many former intelligence and military personnel were running as Democrats. I'm very weary of that because you are taught in those institutions to be protective of power, to be acquiescent to power. So I'm looking at this from the lens of saying, the wealthy know that they've made a mistake with Donald Trump. Maybe they should have just let Hillary take it. They see the amount of discontent. They see that the drugs they have been feeding the populace ain't working no more. And so now they are trying to put in these progressives, which, this is why I keep saying, watch the 2020s. The progressives are likely to do what the progressives did in 2006 when they took over. They are just going to act like Republicans. And as soon as that happens, whereas the general population lost hope and kind of sunk back into melancholy as Barack Obama teetered and the Congress didn't really do what it was supposed to do, and they allowed the Republicans and the conservatives to run roughshod for the next 6 years, I don't believe that's going to happen. You will have real socialists, not progressives. You will have real communists, not progressives, running in the 2020s. And you will have a lively debate on if progressivism is necessary and if conservatism is necessary in order to move this country forward. That's why I keep saying, watch out for the 2020s. And this will come out of necessity, because if the progressives start acting like conservatives, which, again, I've always argued that they're two sides of the same coin, which, to be fair, the upper elite may learn a little bit and may say, no, you gotta literally do, like, with the Kavanaugh hearings, we are seeing Democrats suddenly find a voice. We're seeing Democrats suddenly find a voice, because it is understood by the people who are bankrolling these individuals that, holy crap, the masses are getting a little bit pissed off. You might want to act like you're on their side. They're not playing. So you're going to see this. Now, the reality that many of these people are walking into is a complete, and I'm going to use a military term here, clusterfuck. I don't swear very often, but it's the truth. You have had many of the institutions that are supposed to be protectors of this great country and this democracy, you've had them hollowed significantly. And their activities shifted to private corporations for profit. And you will see more of that. You will see more of that. If you go back to every single country for the, every single president for the last 40 years, 50 years, and actually, I was listening to, a couple of years ago, I was listening to a, an old address. It was a State of the Unions from Lyndon B. Johnson. And I was quite surprised, because it was right after one of Barack Obama's State of the Unions. I want to say this was 2015. And Barack Obama was talking about the reorganization of the government and how it's the biggest reorganization of the government, yada, yada, yada. And Lyndon B. Johnson actually was talking about the same thing. Lyndon B. Johnson. And then I actually listened to a Bill Clinton State of the Union. He was saying the same thing. We've been in this steady, constant flux, not flux, but process of reorganizing the government. The question is why and for what reason? But so the reality which they are walking into is one of devastation. It is possible that Donald Trump wasn't lying, talking about carnage, even though he was talking about it from, you know, the standpoint of rich people, but this is the reality. Now, for the rest of us, what do we have to get ready for? Economic problems. That is the reality. That's what everything I've been saying is coming up to, because if you don't understand what is leading to the economic challenges that we are about to be heading into. And trust me, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that in 3 to 4, maybe 6 years, you guys can write me a bunch of emails and tell me, you remember that podcast episode you did talking about this, that, and this? You're crazy. Look at how better things are now. I hope I'm wrong. If I am, I suspect it'll only be because we really do have this incredible push to take this country in a whole new direction. But the realities that are feeding this stuff, that is feeding this future, come from an unlearned past. So I see what the Federal Reserve is doing with raising interest rates and how negative of an impact that's going to have. I see that the tariffs have started constricting resource flows in this country. I don't know if you've noticed it, but I've noticed since the tariffs took hold. The company which I work for, have had multiple part shortages, and many of those part shortages, I believe, come from overseas. It's to the point where we couldn't run certain lines because we were experiencing no shortages. Moreover, I am even noticing that the store shelves aren't as packed as they used to be. You noticing that? These are signs, ladies and gentlemen. Signs that community is going to be important. Signs that communities of communities are going to be important. And if we aren't ready to build those communities in the next 7 to 8 years, you know, this is kind of like in the Bible when, God, I never can remember the character. I want to say it's Jacob, but I don't think so. But he had the dream, Pharaoh had a dream and couldn't interpret it and was sent to this guy, I think it was a slave, to interpret it. And he interpreted it and said, there's going to be a famine in about 7 years. You want to start storing grain or else your people are going to die. This is kind of like that. In 10, 12 years, there's going to be a famine. And we might want to start preparing for that. Now, that's the great thing about this. Is even if things look like they're getting better, we have time to prepare. We have time to prepare. The problem is going to be if we aren't ready to accept this reality, what it'll mean. That, you know, that's the only problem. And that's really the problem of America, is America usually is not ready for the realities. It just decides to push them off. So, I want to thank you all for listening. I really do, and I want to thank you guys actually for sticking with the podcast. My goal really is to produce this a couple times a month. Because I am putting my mind also into producing a more scripted podcast. So I'm not against producing this a couple times a month just to kind of produce it. There's a lot of information that's come out that needs to be talked about. And so I'm probably going to be doing that. Okay. There will be more on the physics side of life. We will be talking a little bit more about that type of stuff. So, you know, be prepared for that. All right. Much love to all of you. Questions, comments, concerns. The email is there. You know, let me give you the email. I'll actually give you the email. Usually I just leave it wherever I'm posting. But I realized the other day that my podcasts were being posted in a couple of other places that I wasn't posting them at. And so it didn't actually contain my email. The email is actually Vyomir Adis Ogaya, VPHIAMER.ADIS.OGAARWA, Vyomir Adis Ogaya, @Outlook, OUTLOOK.com. So if you want to send me a message, let me know. You know, what do you think about the show? I think I've received about four, well, over the past year, of course, I'm not going to receive that many, but I've received a few. And I want to increase that number as I move forward, because the reality is these are ideas. I know they're not, you know, they're not typical. They're not stuff that you're typically normally going to hear discussed, especially in the way that I discuss them. Nonetheless, for a week or a month. I think they need to be set. So when I really start producing a more scripted one, which you'll see what that's more like, that's I had envisioned that one more spiritually, but there's going to be a lot of non-spiritual stuff in it, so be ready for that. Okay, till the next time. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and they're alone.